Studio 360.
Here we are in the middle of downtown Brooklyn as an evening show is about to begin at the Barclays Center, the great concert and basketball venue. But right outside in front is this enormous public sculpture. The sculpture is called Ona. It is by the artist Ursula von Riddingsvard. It is a dark brown with cuts and jagged pieces cleaved and cut into it. It must be 19 or 20 feet tall. How to describe it?
What does it look like? Like a Doritos chip.
The last part of a lightning bolt.
Maybe a meter, something that dropped.
Is it supposed to look like something? It looks like a branch.
I think it looks modern, but still ancient. It could be from 10,000s of years ago, and it could also be part of a science fiction movie.
Seeing the sculpture, I agreed with all of those random people. And I wanted to find out more about the sculpture and the artist who made it. So did Studio 360's Zoe Saunders.
That sculpture by Ursula von Riddingsvard at the Barclays Center doesn't just perplex bystanders. Even art critic Jillian Steinhauer isn't sure what to make of it.
The work at the Barclays, it sort of looks like someone has cut some chunks out of like a cliff or a rock face and like put them together in this sort of tall, sort of towering form. They remind me sometimes of like tornado forms in the way that they're large on top and often like sort of spiral slash crumple down to the bottom. It's almost like a warped giant ice cream cone in terms of its shape. You would sort of walk by it and be like, huh. And then you sort of do a double take and you're like, wait, what is this weird like tornado ice cream cone form doing in this plaza like in front of Barclays Center? And that makes you want to sort of stop and look at it again and get closer to it.
The work keeps you guessing, but also draws you in.
I find that her work is almost like totemic in a way. It doesn't feel like religious in any way. There's just this suggestion of like ritual in her work. Like if you think about something like Stonehenge, I feel like there's echoes of that.
And that's the thing about places like Stonehenge. You see these great big stones that somehow somebody assembled thousands of years ago, before pulleys or wheels. And they clearly meant something important, but what? So you stand there in awe of it, and you try to figure out who made this, and how, and why, with not many clues to go on.
And so they sort of evoke something ancient and something ritualistic and something that maybe you're not privy to, but you know a person was there. And I think that's where they get some of their power. It just feels like, you know, you're looking at the remnants of some process, and you're sort of left to make sense of what it means.
We may never fully understand the mysteries of Stonehenge, but the person who made this mysterious sculpture is just a few subway stops away.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Ursula von Riddingsvard's studio is right here in Brooklyn, so I went to check it out. Fair warning, lots of noisy saws and drills.
Many people think I run at it with a chainsaw and just, you know, hit it up. But it's not true.
Her studio may be in Brooklyn, but Ursula is no Brooklyn native. She was born to Polish and Ukrainian parents during the Second World War and spent the first few years of her life in Nazi labor camps, and then after the war in Polish refugee camps, until her family was able to emigrate to Connecticut in 1959.
It's so, so detail-oriented. Every single fraction of an inch gets attention. It's very, very time-consuming.
So how does she do it? Her sculptures start out simply enough. First, she lines up a row of 4x4 wooden beams. Picture them as half a dozen sticks of butter, lying flush side by side to form a square. Then she takes a pencil and draws an outline on the boards that will become the sculpture's base.
So it's very important that I mark all of these things. I mark this with a pencil. I mark this on all four sides of my board so that the cutters, they know exactly what to cut. But they all know what this drawing would mean, what needs to be cut and what doesn't need to be cut. And I'm going to bring this, and I'm going to have Ted cut it so that you can see what happens with these lines and what comes out.
One thing you might have guessed from the sheer size of her work is that she doesn't make these sculptures alone. She has a whole team of studio assistants.
Most people don't notice that the marks are different.
Ted Springer has been working with Ursula for almost 20 years. He lives most of the year in Tucson, Arizona, but flies to New York to help out with the cutting.
Each cutter has a different handwriting, a different mark. As the cutters, we all know, oh, that's me, or that's Ruben, or that's Brent, or that's Morgan. And, you know, a lot of us that work here can pick out who cut what in the pieces.
And look at the fidelity he has to the lines, and all of the lines on all four sides are there. He pays attention to them, and he cuts.
Since they're dealing with wood boards, not really sticks of butter, they need to use some serious power tools for the cutting.
It's a Porter Cable 7 1/4 inch circular saw that, largely it's used in construction fields for cutting 2x4s, plywood.
That tool is only meant to be used with straight lines. And that's all we have is straight lines. Every time he cuts into it, it's a straight line.
Once Ted cuts the beam, according to Ursula's line drawing, he tosses it back to Ursula, who then puts it back where it belongs, in our original grid of the sticks of butter. Each one of them is being cut individually before it's incorporated into the whole.
The cutting for Ursula, each one seems like a little mini sculpture almost. I mean, and there's thousands and thousands of these boards and these pieces in each sculpture. And the process of making each one of those is making a whole bunch of individual 3D objects, and that then get all, you know, put into one massive object. She'll draw and it comes to me. I cut it, it goes back to her, and then she traces off of that onto her next board and then starts new lines in a different direction.
We're being a little more polite now, but usually we like throw the boards to the cutter and they throw it back and we screw it.
Morgan Daly is another of Ursula's studio assistants.
And so it's sort of this like dance that happens back and forth all day.
Morgan is an artist herself who first fell in love with Ursula's work when she wrote a paper about it back in art school. When she graduated 6 years ago, she knew she wanted to get a job here.
So it's layer by layer. We build up and screw it until the form's totally complete.
She's screwing actually 4, 4.5 high screw that she's screwing into the cedar log, or it's not a log, the cedar log. And that's what we do first when we build it first, because this way we can take it apart anytime we want and so on. I can change my mind, and it ends up being glued.
So the screws is an intermediary step?
That's right, that's right.
They take the wooden beam that Ted just cut and put it back where it belongs in the larger grid, and then screw it into place. Then, they stack a new layer of 4x4s on top of that, where Ursula draws another outline. And then they continue the process, layer upon layer, until it's 10 or 15, or sometimes 20 feet high. A single sculpture can have dozens of these layers. And every layer has to connect to the one on top of and beneath it. So if that second board in the row is sticking out at like a 60-degree angle, then the one on top of it in the next layer will have to be cut to match. The final piece might look like a craggy cliff face or tree trunk, but the way the lumber is arranged in a neat stack means that there's still this grid structure at its core.
There's a kind of flirtation that happens with the grid and the organic folds that actually fold into this grid. So this creates not only the flirtation, but it also creates a tension, because we have two things going on, something that's very, very organic, and then the other thing is very strictly linear and grid-like.
It's like painting a landscape on a piece of graph paper. The grid is mostly obscured by the trees and the mountains and the blue sky, but if you decided to just leave the puffy clouds unpainted, you'd see the graph paper clearly. In Ursula's sculptures, it's the flat surfaces that really do look like graph paper, while on the craggier surfaces, you barely notice the individual boards. Again, art critic Jillian Steinhauer.
So you get these very clean lines, straight lines of divisions between the blocks of cedar versus the sort of jagged places where the wood has been carved away.
So now we know how Ursula makes her sculptures, but what are we supposed to make of them? And here's where the artist would prefer to be like Stonehenge, silent and mysterious.
Knowing her biography, you can see that there are things that are evocative.
Lots of critics have tried to make sense of her art by tying it back to her biography, her traumatic childhood in Nazi-occupied Poland.
Like, she grew up in these refugee camps and slept in these, you know, wood barracks, and there were these, like, wooden structures everywhere. And so it's hard not to look at the art and kind of see elements of that. And yeah, because the forms can be very foreboding and can be, like, kind of sinister. So then there's associations with fascism and her childhood in that sense.
It's a tempting interpretation, but Ursula dismisses it.
Because honestly, I don't want to be thought of that the only place that I've ever used is the camps, you know, as something that I could start with. I never think about the camps, but, you know, I'm sure that they're a part of who I am, but I never think about them ever when I make my work. I don't.
We want it to be about trauma and her early life, but she says no.
She doesn't like to tie her work, like, too much back to her biography or her childhood, which makes sense because that's how women get pigeonholed. She just seems very resistant to explaining her work very much anyway. She just seems to want to leave space open for the viewer to have their own experience and interpretation. And again, that element of mystery, right? It's like they're both very relatable and also very mysterious.
To add to the mystery, Ursula gives her sculptures these enigmatic titles that don't tell you a whole lot. Ona, Crypta, Chos, Droga.
Because that way I can hide more, you know, I can hide whatever might be the meaning of the work. And people look to titles for meaning. And with me, it never works that way.
Many of the titles are in Polish, her mother tongue.
But the Polish is that not that many people are going to look up what that means. This means it leaves them free to then just see it, because I don't want a number, you know, 23, you know. I don't want to name something untitled, or I don't want to give them a number. Like, I would hate that.
I love that there's so many associations, and it's evocative enough to give you the associations. Like, with this, it calls up so much, but you can never pin it down. And that's a really strong quality, I think, for art, because it makes the process of viewing it very personal.
Why do I make art? Because there's a constant hope inside of me that this process will heal me, my family, and the world.
This is from her personal manifesto, which she wrote for her solo show in Washington, D.C. at the National Museum for Women in the Arts.
Because I like embroidering around my long-ago Polish fantasies. Because I can reach into the future with my work. And also because I want to get answers to questions for which I know there are no answers.
Artists like Ursula von Riddingsvard construct pieces. And from their work, we try to construct meaning. But like Ursula says, maybe there are no answers. Back at the studio, at the end of the day, it's just the end of the day. Everyone's unplugging their saws and heading home to their presumably quieter apartments.
Okay, I'll see you in the morning, right? Okay. Ursula's probably one of the most gracious people I've ever met.
Courtney Childress is Ursula's office manager.
She's so grateful for all of our time and energy. It's really beautiful. It, like, almost makes me want to cry a little bit. We all got to go to the opening at the National Museum of Women in the Arts, and she brought us down, and we went to the opening, and it was amazing, and the show looked great, and she got up and gave a speech and didn't say one word about herself, aside from, I'm so grateful for this person and that person and everything that they do to make sure that I can make the work. I've worked with a lot of people, and that's not how it normally goes.
That story was produced by Studio 360's Zoe Saunders. And if you're going to be in Washington, D.C. this month, that exhibit of Ursula von Riddingsvard's work will be up at the National Museum of Women in the Arts until the end of the month.